And welcome to Extra Innings with Nick and Mark here on podcast. Today is Friday, June 14th, 2013. And we thank you for tuning in to today's podcast. We said we'd be back, and we finally are. Alongside Mark Scarcella, I am Nick Petrone. And a lot going on in the sports world today. And Mark, welcome back.
I'm back, Nick. I'm ready for some action. We got the podcast up. A lot of stuff happened in the sports world. I think we should dive right into it. What do you think, Nick?
Yeah, let's get right into it. Well, before we get into it, let's just remind everybody you can follow us on Facebook at WAZL Extra Innings and on Twitter at WAZL Sports Radio. And that's where you can easily download all of our podcasts and get the latest sports news and latest news for all of our shows. So, yeah, Mark, let's dive right into it. Obviously, we had game four of the NBA Finals last night. Spurs, Heat in a basically a must-win situation. And once again, with their backs against the ropes, they come out and just take care of business, Mark.
Took care of business, and what better way to do it in a must-win game? Like you said, game four, 109-93, Heat took it. And let's be honest, Nick, the big three showed up last night. We had Dwayne Wade score 32, had six steals, six rebounds, four assists. Chris Bosh, 20 points, 13 rebounds. LeBron James, 33 points, 11 rebounds, 4 assists. They came ready to play, Nick. And in a game four, a must-win situation, because you're going to go down 3-1, they needed it, and they needed it from these guys, and they stepped up in a big, big way. But, I mean, you still have to beat San Antonio one more time at home. It's going to be interesting to see what happens on Sunday. But we got if you're the Miami Heat right now, you got to feel comfortable where you're at.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Especially with you know, Tony Parker played last night, but he had the hamstring issue going into last night's game. Didn't seem like it affected him too much, though, Mark.
No, not at all. I think it was just more of a precaution thing for the coaching staff and just to make sure that he was ready to go. I don't think it was more than everybody got diced up to be. It was more than everybody thought it was. But mm-hmm. I think Tony Parker really showed that he could still do it injured. And if you're injured in the NBA Finals, you don't want to really tell anybody, but you kind of play through the injury. That's what it seems like in the NBA Finals. And Tony Parker showed up last night. He played very well, 15 points, 9 assists, and 4 rebounds. You know, it's pretty good for him, especially having a sore hamstring like he did. But a lot of people didn't show up for this San Antonio team.
No.
I mean, where is Manu Ginobili? Is he – I mean, do we have to go on a hit list and find out where this guy is right now? Yeah, 5 points.
Yeah, he didn't have – he only had one field goal, and it didn't come until late in the game.
Yeah, and, I mean, Danny Green, 10 points, not bad, but, I mean, no one really just showed up for this team right now. I mean, Thiago Splitter, 4 points, 2 rebounds. It just seemed like the Miami Heat were ready for this game, and they knew what they had to do, and they had a job, that was to win this game and, you know, get the series back to Miami.
Exactly. So now it's definitely going to be going back to Miami, regardless of what happens in Game 5, obviously, and yeah, I think the series has gone back and forth. We've seen the Spurs get early momentum, then the Heat got it, now then the Spurs, and now I think the Heat have a ton of momentum. And Mark, what is with the Spurs just turning it over like crazy? I mean, we saw it in Game 2. That's why they lost, and I believe they had 18 more turnovers last night. I mean, what's going on?
See, and you don't really see this from San Antonio. In Game 1, they had 4 turnovers, but then again, in Game 2, they had 17 turnovers, and now they revert back to in Game 4 to turn the ball over. And I think it's more of the Miami defense. You can see them come out in the second half, and they throw a little pressure at you in the front court. And San Antonio just seemed to find a lot of trouble when they don't have Tony Parker controlling the ball, and they're trying to have Gary Neal. Good point guard, but he's more of a combo scoring guard, and he tries to bring the ball up, and sometimes a lot of turnovers happen, and you got to give credit to Miami. Trapping and Dwayne Wade, 6 steals. The guy is ready to play, and he's getting a lot of doubt that he's getting older, he's hobbled, he's not 100%, but he's still, time and time again, he's showing on defense end, he can get it done. And if you're Greg Popovich, you got to wonder, you got to get into the locker room and say, hey, listen, guys, we're getting beat by turnovers right now. 18 turnovers to 9, they'll beat every time, Nick.
Oh, absolutely.
We've seen it time and time again in every single sport. If you turn over the ball, you're not going to win the game.
Not
especially
gonna.
In the NFL, NBA. It's kind of a recurring thing that happens. If you turn the ball over, you're not going to win. And last night we've seen that nothing really happened for this San Antonio team. And Gregory Popovich, you got to figure that, you know, let's go. Let's dice dissect some plays in practice and see what we can do to figure this out, because 18 turnovers, not going to get it done in the NBA Finals.
No, absolutely not. Let's talk about Dwayne Wade a little bit. 32 points last night, 14 of 25 shooting. You mentioned he had the five or six steals, four assists, six rebounds. He looked like the Dwayne Wade of old last night. And, you know, why do we see inconsistency with him so much anymore?
I think it's more of the knee. I really think that's what it is. It's coming down to that he's always, when it comes to playoff time, it seems like he's always hobbled. He's always running out of gas a little bit. But every time he gets in the NBA Finals, he seems to show up. I think he realizes that it's the NBA Finals, and he didn't have a great postseason. I mean, he had a decent postseason. It wasn't very good. He wasn't shooting very well, but I think it's more of getting focused and getting confidence. That's what the Miami Heat, the whole Miami Heat team played with tons of confidence last night. You seen LeBron James hitting 15-footers when he was giving them, and Dwayne Wade showing that he could still move, man. He still has it in him. But
oh, yeah, absolutely.
I think it's more of it's in his head. And it's, you know, he is hurt. You got to realize that. If you're hurt, you're not going to play at 100%. And he seems like he's playing nonchalantly sometimes in the first half. But the second half, he really turns it on. And when he went over and blocked Tim Duncan, I almost went nuts. Because it's Tim Duncan versus Dwayne Wade. Duncan 6'11", Dwayne Wade 6'6", maybe 6'6". Mm-hmm. That might be a little bit higher than a lot of people know, that he might be 6'5". But still. Dwayne Wade, 14 for 25 last night. He showed that he could still do it. And inconsistency, I think, it's more of just in his head. And, you know, like I said, he's not 100%. So, you know, it's gonna be debatable. I want to see more of this, though. You know what I mean, Nick?
Yeah.
I want to see more of it. I want to see Game 5. I want to see him come out and really show what he did in Game 4. Because Game 4, he played terrific. He looked like he was 23 out there.
Right. And if, you know, if the big three for the Heat here, if they do this... It's impossible to beat them when they do this. 33 for James, 32 for Wade, and 20 for Bosch. I mean, just forget it. Just pack it up, forget about it, move on to the next game, because you're not going to beat them when they do that.
And, Nick, I'm looking at the board differential right here. The Miami Heat didn't dominate on the boards, but they really beat the San Antonio Spurs on the boards. They did. Tim Duncan, they kept him off the boards. He only had 5 rebounds. Kawhi Leonard, who had 14 or 15 boards in Game 3, only had 7. I mean, not great, but not bad. He only had 1 offensive board, which he had like 8 or 9 in Game 3. So Miami did a lot of different things in this game. They made some adjustments, especially in the starting lineup, actually. Udonis Haslem did not start this game. Mike Miller started this game, played 21 minutes, 0 points, but I think they really wanted to spread the court out and make Tim Duncan or Diago Splitter really guard Mike Miller from the three-point arc and really get him out of the paint and let open it up for Dwayne Wade and LeBron James, as we've seen they did last night. 33 points, 11 rebounds for LeBron, and 32 for Dwayne Wade. So they're doing a lot of different things. They're not just doing one particular thing. It's more of, you know, getting out in transition, spreading the court, hitting some threes, and playing with a lot of confidence. That's exactly what they're playing with right now. And if they keep on doing this, the big three, and get some, you know, Mario Chalmers in the mix a little bit. Ray Allen had 14 points. Nick, guy's almost, I think he's almost 40. 14 points right now.
He could do it. There's no doubt about it. He could come out and have these games.
Yeah, and another guy who didn't play, Chris Anderson.
Yeah, I was just going to bring that up to you.
Didn't play, but guess what? When he gets in the game, he brings a ton of energy. So the sky's the limit for Miami Heat. When they actually get their heads on straight and they figure out what they need to do against a team, They're a very, very good team. I think they're the best team in the league right now. I think they're better than... Now, let me ask you this, Nick. Who's the better team? I know the Miami Heat has better star power, obviously. But who do you think is the better team? I wanted to ask you that.
The better team, I would go with the Spurs. I think San Antonio plays a better team basketball. Not that they have better players, but... You know, we've seen this over 15, 16 years, and it doesn't change. It's just the same team game, and they play better as a team. Now, with that being said, Miami has the better players. I mean, LeBron James and Dwayne Wade might be better than anybody on San Antonio. I mean, you could argue Tony Parker, Tim Duncan, but they're all up there in age. And we haven't seen anything from Manu Ginobili in this series.
No. He's
non-existent. No, he's not doing anything right now. One field goal last night, as we said earlier. So I would say Miami is the better players, but San Antonio plays better as a team. And, you know, I still think Miami's going to win this series in the end. I think.
Oh, wow.
I took them when we did our show on Monday. I said Miami in six, and I don't know. I mean, the Spurs, if they keep turning it over like that, they can't keep playing inconsistent. I mean, both teams have been playing inconsistent. So with three games left, I possibly see this going seven games right now, and I still like the Heat. I mean, the Heat basically are going to get a chance to win the finals at home, even if they lose the next game. They're going to have a chance to win it at home, and I don't know. The Spurs have to bounce back. I expect they will, but we'll see what happens.
And the Spurs show they can win Miami, but with the stakes so high, I don't know. I like San Antonio in this series to go seven games, but it's really, I think it's a more of a pick'em type of deal right now. And it's a matter of who makes the right adjustments and who is making shots at the end of the second half in the fourth quarter. That's what it comes down to, I think. It's not, I think the first half you can just pretty much throw it out the window pretty at all, because in the second half is when everybody really comes to front point. And, you know, it's going to be a fun series, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. You are... You're listening to Extra Innings with Nick and Mark here on podcast. It is Friday, June 14th, 2013. Talking some NBA Finals here. Of course, the U.S. Open currently going on as we speak. And much more going on across the board. NFL news we'll get to in a little bit. So we'll get back to this in a little bit, Mark. Let's shift gear. Let's stick in the NBA and shift to... the Jason Kidd hiring as the Nets' next head coach, and let's get your thoughts on that.
Nick, I really like, not that I really like the move. There could be a lot worse things that could happen for this Brooklyn Nets team. Obviously, Jason Kidd, he's learned a lot about coaching. He's been in the league for 19 years, only 10 days away from playing in the NBA playoffs. Not in the NBA playoffs, I shouldn't say, but in the NBA, and then he retired. But I mean, he's been there. He's been in this Brooklyn Nets organization. He's been there since, he's been there 9 years. He played 2001 to 2008. And it really, he blew the Brooklyn Nets front office out of the water in an interview. And it was just so, you know, mind-boggling to see Jason Kidd coming out fresh out of, you know, the NBA and really knowing a lot about the coaching, obviously. And I like to hire, but it's kind of, he is a rookie, you know what I mean, Nick? Mm-hmm. It's not like he has experience. He's actually the first one to do this, actually come right out of the NBA into coaching since Mike Dunleavy in 1991 when he was, and then he had also Paul Silas as well. So I think Jason Kidd is a lot, it could be worse, but I think time will tell how good Jason Kidd could be as a good head coach. So, I mean, not bad, but it's a work in progress, I think.
Yeah, I don't mind the move at all. I mean, I think it's obviously a different direction that they're going in, and, you know, why not? You know, things, you know, they made the playoffs last year. They have a playoff caliber team, and obviously Jason Kidd did something in the interview that really blew them away, and it's his job now, and he's trying to get former Nets coach Frank to join his staff.
Yeah, Lawrence Frank, he also coached the Nets as well, so...
Yeah, correct. So I mean, we'll see what happens with that, but, you know, I mean, what do you have to lose? You know, the Nets started fresh last year with Avery Johnson. He got fired early in the season anyway, so maybe, you know, they're going to say, well, hey, listen, Jason, if it's not looking good early, we may, you know, we'll go a different way, but we're going to give you a shot, so I don't have a problem with it.
Yeah, and then they also had interim head coach PJ Carlesimo. Do we think he should have got fired?
No.
I personally don't think he should have got fired. When he came out in an interview saying that if he went to the NBA Finals or he won a championship, it could have saved his job. So obviously I think the Brooklyn Nets were kind of inching to get a new coach in there, a new face. That's what they said they want. They want a new face in the franchise.
Yeah, you know, they have the Russian billionaire owner, Prokhorov. He wants to make a big splash. And I guess this is the move they wanted to make. And, you know, Carlesimo did a great job. I mean, I think that was one of the top winning seasons in the history of the Nets.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with the Clippers. And these guys are getting fired. I just don't know what these general managers are looking for. I mean, you look at the Clippers, how many bad seasons they had. And then they finally have a great season. And, all right, get out of here, Del Negro. We'll go find somebody else. And, you know, there's talk of Doc Rivers being in the mix for the Clippers now.
Yes, there is.
So we'll see what happens with that. But I don't know. I just don't get it.
And getting back to Jason Kidd, the whole ordeal, his head coaching experience and everything, this team is set for success. And a lot of people like to say, "Eh, it's kind of a risky move." Yeah, it is a risky move. Don't get me wrong; it's not. It's not that it's not a risky move, but a lot of things could be worse. You have Brook Lopez on the team; he's an all-star. Darren Williams, another possibly, arguably the best point guard in the league. I'm not gonna, you know, I think
he's up there.
He's up there. Let's put it; he's in discussion. Joe Johnson, great scorer, great wingman. He can shoot from anywhere on the court. Jared Wallace, freak athlete. He could also shoot it a little bit, and he boards very well. And you can't forget about Chris Humphries. No, he's not the, you know, he's not a highlight reel type of guy. He's one of those junkyard dogs, like I said, like Dwayne Gilley from Houston area. He used to be a junkyard dog jumping in the mix a little bit. Chris Humphries, he'll get you 8 points, 8 boards a game. So this team is built for success, and I think Jason Kidd will do a pretty decent job in the future. But like I said, time will tell. You never really know.
And let me ask you this, Mark. Do you think Brooklyn goes after Dwight Howard at all this offseason?
No.
You think that's off the table? And we saw last year.
I think that's completely off the table. I think that signing of Brook Lopez, and I think they signed him to 5 or 6 years. I just don't think they have the money to give Dwight Howard, and that's what it comes down to in every professional sport, is if you don't have the money, I'm not going there. So, right. And there's also reports that Dwight Howard and CP3 are trying to team up because they're both going to be free agents this year. Atlanta is in the mix. That's Dwight Howard's hometown. That's still up for debate if that's going to happen. But getting back to Dwight Howard going to Brooklyn, that's no, not going to happen. I say 1% chance.
All right. Well, that ends that then. all right. Well,
you never know.
So right now it is 11:30 as we're doing this podcast. And, of course, the U.S. Open going on just about an hour and a half from us here down in Ardmore, Pennsylvania. And let's take a look at where we're standing right now in the U.S. Open. Luke Donald currently leading at 4-under. He's through 4 as we speak. And Phil Mickelson, Mark, was leading after day one. He's at 3-under. And this is just crazy. I mean, he got into Ardmore yesterday, which is right outside of Philly, at about 5:30 a.m., had a tee off at about 7 a.m. because he waited out in California for his daughter's graduation, and just comes out, shoots a 3-under, and just does a tremendous job. And, you know, could this finally be the tournament where Phil gets things back going again?
I don't know, Nick. And I'm going to hold my breath for because I really hope Phil pulls it through, because he's been so inconsistent this year. And, I like he's shooting a -3 now, but it's very, very early, and I mean, I don't know. I hope it happens for him, but I just think there's a little bit better competition out there for him, and I think Phil is coming down to the back nine of his career. But it would be awesome to see him go out in a bang. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, you know, he had that good tournament last week, so he's coming off of that, playing well right now, and I think he's going to be in the mix. I don't know if he's going to win it, but today's an important day. If he can shoot, even if he just shoots even today, he can't have a bad day. He's got to stay in the mix, and I think he'll be okay. Let's look at some other notables. Ricky Fowler tied for 8th right now, and he's even. He tees off at 4:30 today. Bubba Watson is +1. Dustin Johnson +1. McIlroy also +1. Ernie Els
back
up to +1, the big guy from South Africa.
He doesn't care.
No, he doesn't. Mike Weir coming out of nowhere. He's at +2, the former Masters winner.
Mike Weir is a very good golfer. He's just not consistent.
Not at all.
You know, he always does very good, and then towards the later part of the tournament, just falters out. Mike Weir, very good from Canada.
Absolutely. Tiger Woods, Adam Scott, both tied at +2, tied for 29th right now. They are both through 3 holes on day 2, and Sergio Garcia also behind them at 3 over. And that's it for the most part. Some guys that are right now, as of 11:30, it's still early, and I'm sure most of you are going to be listening to this later in the show or later in the day. The projected cut right now is +3. Some notables that are above that are Brant Snedeker, Matt Kuchar at +4. Those are the big names. Zach Johnson trying to get back into things. He's at +4. So we'll see what happens here. But Mark, some of the guys we looked at on Monday, you liked Lee Westwood.
Yeah.
Currently, he is, I think he fell a little bit here. Let me find him.
+3. +3. He is 44. Tied for 44th, +3. I think he I think he screwed up that hole, the last hole, I think, because he was at minus one. So I think he probably either be bogeyed or double bogeyed. I didn't get to see it. So
yeah, he fell back a couple strokes. And KJ Choi tied for fourth right now, Mark.
And Nick, one under. Is there any more guy that is consistent than Kenji Choi?
I'll tell you why. It doesn't seem like it. He is always in the mix. You know, he doesn't seem to win a lot, but he seems to get tied second a lot, tied third a lot.
Yeah, he's always there.
So he's gonna be there. He's one under right now through three on the second day. So we'll keep you updated throughout our show today of what's going on in the U.S. Open. Just right in our backyard, basically, this year. So
I ain't feeling it. You know what, Nick? We should have got some tickets.
Well, if the tickets weren't $300 a day, I would have. Believe me, I was planning on going until I saw the ridiculous amount of price for these tickets. But you know what? What are you going to do? Hey. Should we just go right now? You just want to go?
We might have to just pause this thing and come back to it and let everybody know what happened.
Yeah,
so
we'll just go report live from the U.S. Open.
We'll take our iPads there.
You're listening to X-Strings with Nick and Mark here on podcast alongside Mark Scarcell. I am Nick Patrone, and we are a sports talk radio show based out of Hazleton, Pennsylvania, usually airing every Monday night on 1490 WAZL, and finally get some podcasts back up and going here. And, well, Mark, let's shift to some notable news that we haven't talked about yet. Happened the other day. Tebow, goes to the New England Patriots, and, you know, we talked about it on Monday. We were talking about Jamarcus Russell getting worked out by Chicago and possibly Baltimore, and, you know, how it was funny that he was getting looked at and Tebow was just doing nothing. But Tebow goes to New England now. Let me first start by saying, does it surprise you that Bill Belichick is doing this move?
Does it surprise me? A little bit. I'd say I'm 50-50 on that, just because Bill Belichick doesn't like, you know, the whole media getting involved with his team, and that's what Tim Tebow brings to pretty much anywhere he goes. And that's what I will say, but if there's any guy who's going to coach Tim Tebow and make him a better, I don't want to say quarterback, better player, it's going to be Bill Belichick and the mastermind that he has. But it surprises me to a certain extent. It was just publicity. But other than that, it's Bill Belichick. He'll figure a way out. He's always does. He always does. So, I mean, we'll see what happens. Do I like it? No, not at all. Absolutely not.
Well, I mean, he's obviously not going to be playing quarterback. I mean, I don't see how that's going to happen. I mean, he's not even their backup. Ryan Mallett is a much better quarterback at backup than Tim Tebow would be.
Oh my God, hands down.
So, I don't know what the plan is here. I really don't. I would like this, you know, I don't know. I don't know, because I've seen video of him at practice already throwing the ball, so that makes me think he's going to stay at quarterback, but I don't know. I mean, I'm sure Belichick has something up his sleeve here. I don't see him going out and signing him. I mean, he's basically getting no money to play. I don't see it happening. I think Tebow is going to end up playing a different position.
Now, let me ask you this, Nick. What position do we necessarily see him playing? Because people like to say that we could bring him on third and one, you know, fourth and two, you know, third and two is whatever. But Tom Brady is like 85-90% getting first downs on those. I don't know the actual stat. I think it was like 75 out of 80 plays last year that were like third and two or third and ones he got. So I don't think you're going to use him for short yard situations. I don't really know what position he could ascend to.
I mean, I could see him possibly. Fullback. I don't know. I mean, he could definitely play fullback, H-back, or tight end. There's no doubt about that.
I think he would be a bad tight end.
What's that?
I don't think he would be.
No,
a bad
I don't.
Tight
I don't
end.
Either. I mean, but that's another position New England doesn't really need. I mean, obviously we don't know when Gronkowski's coming back. But, you know, no Danny Woodhead, so maybe they throw him into the mix at running back a little bit. I Mark, I really couldn't even tell you. I couldn't even tell you, but I'll tell you what. Whatever they do with him, it really is not going to surprise me, because Belichick, he'll just do, he does what he does. And the first day that after he got signed, when the media came up, he basically just said, all right, we're done talking about him, let's move on. So
that's what Bill Belichick does. He doesn't like a lot of media. He likes to scrutinize his players and tell them what to say and when to say it. And it's been New England Patriots, you know, in their whole organization. That's how it's been throughout for the last 10, 15 years. And, you know, bringing Tim Tebow there is only going to bring more controversy, I think, more than it's going to help you. I don't know. Like I said, it's Bill Belichick. He knows a lot, of tons, billions, trillions more than I do. But still, I think it's you're bringing. I think you're opening up a can of worms bringing Tim Tebow in. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, well, I mean, like you said, if there's one place he's going to go and, you know, not have all the controversy, it's going to be New England. And I think Belichick will play that down, and probably the best-case scenario for Tim Tebow.
Yeah. Now, one thing working in his Tim Tebow's favor is Josh McDaniels, who drafted Tim Tebow in the 2010 draft, is their offense coordinator. So, hey, maybe he has something up his sleeve that we don't know about yet, and he could make some adjustment and make Tim Tebow fit in his offense. I don't know.
Yeah, great. That's a great point you bring up there with you know, McDaniels being back in New England, and he was the one that drafted him and wanted to build that whole offense around him, and it you know, it worked for that year that McDaniels was, he wasn't even there when his first year John Fox was there, and Tebow really took that team to the playoffs, unbelievable run. But yeah, we'll see what plays out there. Who knows though?
Yeah, you never know, really. But, you know, if he's going to, like you said, if he's going to be successful anywhere, it would be with the New England Patriots and with Bill Belichick. I think he'll settle Tim Tebow in, and he'll make it work. He'll make it work, as time and time again we've seen it with Bill Belichick and the whole New England Patriots staff.
Now, Mark, something else I want to bring up. Let's stay with the AFC East here. The Jets, of course, in the news. Rex Ryan says he wants to use Geno Smith in the read option, something that he didn't even do in college. What do you make of this?
No, I don't have a problem with it. I really don't.
How? He didn't even play the read option at West Virginia.
Well, I think that's why they have training camp. That's why they have OTAs. This is why. This is what you put. I'm not saying use it all the time, but it couldn't hurt this new.
It's not going to help.
New York Jets team at all, because they have nothing. I don't think this team's not 500. No way.
No, I don't think they're. I
team, so it couldn't hurt.
Personally, I think they're the worst team in the AFC East right now. Well, you know, the Bills are in the mix there, but
that's better though. At least they have talent.
Yeah, they do have some talented players. I mean, the Jets' offense. I don't know. I don't know what Rex Ryan's thinking. Why would you put this guy in the read option? He didn't even play it in college. It doesn't make any sense to me. It doesn't. I don't know. And
I don't have a problem with it. I feel like it's. I think he's reaching for. I think he's reaching for an offense right now, because I don't think he has one.
He has zero offense. Zero offense. And let me. I don't know. I don't know what that whole organization is.
Sorry, let me ask you this. Do you think it's a desperation move for Rex Ryan to keep his job?
He's got to do something to keep his job.
Make Geno Smith be a better player and try to help his offense in the same way, but put a different wrinkle in it. Because.
But let me.
Is it a desperation move, is what I'm asking you?
I don't think it's a desperation move, because we don't even know if he's the starter yet. But, you know, first of all, I never understand why coaches come out and tell everybody, yeah, we're thinking about doing the read option with Geno Smith. Why are you telling everybody in June? Why don't you save it until the first week of the season so it's a surprise? Okay, here, it's basically, okay, guys, here's the plays we're going to be running this year. Here, everybody in the media gets a playbook handed out to all of our teams. Here you go. Here's what we're going to be running. You know, I don't understand. I never understood this. You know, teams do this all the time. Okay, here's what we're going to be doing with him. Why are you telling everybody? I don't understand it.
That's
and
true.
You know what, Rex? I think it's time to get out of New York. And you know, let me ask you this, Mark. If they have a bad season and they let him go, do you see him getting hired as a head coach again anytime soon?
I could see it happening, just because the NFL is like, what have you done for me lately type of league. And sometimes you see coaches get fired for no apparent reason. It's just personnel moves that they didn't make, and general managers don't like their head coach. But I don't think he's a very good coach, a head coach.
Nah, he's a great – at it. We obviously know he's a great defensive mind.
Yeah, that's what you should stick with.
But this Jets team is just – offensively has gotten – progressively worse every year that he's been there. You know, who knows what we're going to see out of Mark Sanchez. One week you're hearing at training camp that he looks like garbage. Another week they're saying he looks great. Well, that's all well and good, but it's June right now, everybody. Mark Sanchez could look like Joe Montana at training camp. I really don't care. Until the pads come on and the game starts, it doesn't matter.
This is true.
So, but...
I mean, now there's reports out that he's saying he's a lot better coach that people give him credit for. I don't think that's right for him to even come out and say, because he's missed the playoffs the last 2 years, and he didn't have a winning record those 2 years. He
If
was
you
7-9
have to,
1 year and 6-10 the other year.
Yeah, if you have to come out and tell everybody how good of a coach you are, then you're probably not. I mean, you know, I don't get why he's saying that he has to. You know, I just don't understand. I think the Jets need a massive overhaul of a change, and I think after last year was the year they should have done it. I think they should have.
Fire sale?
What's that?
Fire sale, maybe?
Yeah, I think so. I think they got rid of Revis. I think that was the time to just let everything go and start fresh, because, I mean, you have a defensive-minded coach and you're getting rid of your best defensive player. I just don't get it. I still don't get that trade.
I personally don't get it either. I mean, they traded their best. No, you said the best defensive player.
He was their best player. Yeah,
he was the best player on that team.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah.
But still, I like you said, I don't get why they made that move. But still, Rex Ryan coming out and saying he's a better coach than he should get his credit for. Back it up a little bit, Rex. Back it up a little bit. Let's make the playoffs in the next 2 years, and then we'll talk. But you might not even be around this year, so. Let's back that off a little bit. I don't think you're that good of a coach, and you think you are.
No, exactly. I mean, he's a good defensive coordinator. We know that. He knows the defensive side of the ball, but offensively, there's no control. And the reason I say that I don't think he'd get a job again is just too much shenanigans going on. I mean, it was funny at first coming out saying this and that, talking, you know, like a big tough guy, and making all these predictions early on in his career with the Jets. But now, you know, he hasn't done anything.
Yeah,
and there's nothing there to back it up, so you know, give it a rest, Rex.
Yeah, I think he was talking a big game because he was winning, and that's what it was about.
Well, yeah.
I think it's obviously when he started losing, he was nice as peaches. No, he wasn't bragging or anything. He
yeah.
was, well, we missed the playoffs last year. I missed it again. We don't care. Huh? You know what? I think we have a good team. The way he presented himself, I think he's more of a. I'm trying to look for the word. He just presents himself in the wrong demeanor. That's what I think it is. And if I'm looking at this roster right now, San Antonio Holmes, $9 million. Is he worth $9 million right now?
Not anymore. I mean, he, if he wants to play, you know, if he's another guy. If he wants to put the effort in, he could be a tremendous receiver like we saw in Pittsburgh, but I don't think he's worth that. I think he's a guy you should let go and just start. I'm telling you, I think they just need to start over fresh. Find a guy. I mean, they drafted Geno Smith early on, which I think was an awful move, just for the fact that if that pick doesn't work out, you know, you're putting yourselves in reverse. I understand they still have Mark Sanchez there, and I still think he'll be a starting quarterback day one, even though he shouldn't be. What's that?
No, he shouldn't be. You're right. You're right.
I mean, if you're going to draft a quarterback that high, you better be playing him. So I don't know. It's just a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, and I kind of think Calvin Pace is on the outs too. He's been 11 years in the league on this team. You know, I think it's going to be more of a fire sale than what we think. I think there's going to be a couple people left go on this New York Jets team. But like you said, Nick, if you're going to draft Geno Smith that high, and Mark Sanchez, not a very good quarterback personally. I'm not a fan. I kind of think Ryan Fitzpatrick is better than him personally. I would take Ryan Fitzpatrick over Mark Sanchez.
Yeah, but that was the thing. They didn't do anything to help Mark Sanchez. I mean, they didn't go out and get any receivers or anything like that. I mean, you're not doing anything to help a guy that's already in a bad situation.
Yeah, and I mean, they lost Dustin Keller, probably his main guy who he can go to your Miami Dolphins.
I'll tell you what, that might be the most excited free agent pick I'm most excited about for the Dolphins.
Really?
I'll tell you what, I think that's a huge signing. He's coming off that big injury, but that's Keller's a very good tight end.
Now what are we going to do in Anthony Fasano? Is there anything? I'm just bringing out, is Anthony Fasano, are they going to still keep him there?
No, he signed with the Chiefs.
Oh, that's cool. Okay.
Fasano. So, yeah, so he's a Kansas City Chief, so he's gone. So they went out and got Keller, and we'll see what happens with the Dolphins. I mean, they still got to bring it together.
They have Brian Hartline, who came out of nowhere last year, played very well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you got Mike Wallace, Brian Hartline.
They
got Gibson from the Rams now, too. So it's a pretty solid receiving core. Obviously, Devon Best has gone to Cleveland. You know, we'll see what happens, and we'll see if Deion Jordan can get out to a hot start for the Dolphins. So it's I'm actually excited about an NFL season for the first time in about a decade. So we'll see what happens with Miami.
Maybe you have your Ryan Tannehill back there, and you have some. Yeah, Pat Devlin, too. I can't believe they actually still have him. Pat Devlin, he's still in the league.
And
Wow.
Matt Moore, they're some solid backups. I mean,
Yeah,
so we'll
let's
see
put
what
it, let's put
happens.
it this way. Miami's future is very bright, even though they lost Reggie Bush, but still.
Well, I have to, Lamar Miller, look out for him this year.
There
Big
you go.
year, calling it. Big year.
Sneaky guy.
But let's shift over to the Stanley Cup here for a couple minutes here before we maybe wrap it up. Just an unbelievable game one between the Blackhawks and the Bruins, Mark. Triple overtime game. Chicago wins 4-3. Game two is Saturday at 8 o'clock, and you know, good, these guys needed those 2 days off because that was just a ridiculous game one.
I can't believe what I watched, Nick, and I'm just getting into the hockey game. You got me into it. I'm just, you know, put when the Stanley Cup's on, the playoffs. This is the most intense I've ever seen hockey before. You know what I mean? And you argued with me about NBA playoffs and NHL playoffs, which is better to watch. I'm kind of on the rear right now of what I want to pick because watching that, the Chicago versus Boston last night, not last night, the triple overtime game, 4-3, which Chicago won, but still, it was the most watched Stanley Cup since 1997, 16 years ago. So, you know what, it was an unbelievable game to watch, and you know what, I can't wait for game two.
Yeah,
pumped.
And this is why I say that, I think the NHL is more exciting to watch than the NBA playoffs, just for the fact that you get these overtime games, it could be over in the blink of an eye, and it's just back and forth, just excitement, and these teams are so evenly matched up, it's ridiculous. There was one point in double overtime where there was 100 faceoffs and each team won 50. I mean, this is going to be, I expect this to go to 7 games. I really do. It's going to be interesting to see how Boston can bounce back in game two tomorrow night. But even if they go down 2-0, I don't think they have to be too worried because this is a team that has been there before and they could make a comeback.
That's very true. And Nick, I want to get your opinion on this. Do you think Nathan Horton, he was injured? Is it going to be one of those things where is he going to be able to play next
He'll play.
Game?
It's hockey. He's playing. If he's day to day and it's hockey, you could expect to see him in there.
Now, Nick, I was reading this actually. I seen it. But when they give you injuries out, they never really dissect of what the injury is. It only says upper body or lower body.
Yeah, I don't know if that's an NHL rule where you're not allowed to discuss the injury during the. I don't know what the situation is there, or if it's just the fact that they're hockey players and, you know, one injury doesn't matter from the next. They're going to come back anyway for the most part. I mean, you see blood all over the place all the time. I don't know what the issue is with that. I kind of think there might be some kind of regulation against that, but I'm not really sure.
No, Nick, are all these games going to triple overtime? Curious. I'm asking you.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, they're so evenly matched up. It wouldn't even surprise me if each game went to overtime because, I mean, we just go back and forth. And the Boston should have won that game. They were up 3-1 in the third period. There's no way they should have lost that game. A bad break on the game-tying goal deflected off one of their own players and went in. But, you know, you can't afford to be blowing leads like that on the road. Road games are, you know, as you know, Mark, in any sport, you got to win. If you're winning in the road late, you can't afford to lose.
No, not at all. And I mean, that was the fifth longest game to Stanley Cup Finals in NHL history. So, it's when you're on the road, when you have a lead like that, 3-1, with Boston had, you really gotta overcome the obstacles and really hold that lead because when you're on the road, you might not get that game back. You really not might not. And
absolutely not.
The Boston Bruins, you know, I think Boston's gonna win this series ultimately.
Mm-hmm.
I think they will, but Chicago Blackhawks. They don't give up. They don't give up, and time again, they've shown in the NHL playoffs that they can beat anybody, and they can hang with anybody, and Boston Bruins, they're on the ropes a little, but I still think Boston will win this series, but it's going to be time will tell. I mean, game two is going to be a hell of a game, that's for sure.
That is tomorrow night, 8 o'clock, game two, and NBA Finals game five is Sunday as well, so a couple big games coming up in the championships. But I think that's pretty much going to wrap it up. Or let's talk some baseball before we wrap it up here.
That's right. Let's get some baseball.
Get some baseball here. We haven't talked baseball in a little bit. Baseball coming up towards the middle of the season here. It's the prize team right now, Mark. Even though they made the playoffs last year, I mean, Oakland is just really – Did we really expect this out of them? They have the best record in the American League.
Not at all. Not at all. And Billy Beane and company just, I mean, it doesn't shock me just by the success we've seen in the past 2 years from this Oakland Athletic team. They don't have any studs on this team, Nick. And you see, you're starting to see a little trend in the major leagues now is that people aren't going, they're going after big namers, but they're getting more of a unit for baseball on their teams. They're more of a, not big namers, but guys who get it done and get on base. And you know what, Billy Beane, as we've seen in Moneyball, these guys got on base, and you know what, they have impressed. And I mean, another guy I want to talk about is Coco Crisp, having an unbelievable year.
Coco Crisp hitting 297 with 8 homers and 24 RBI. And you know, another guy, Josh Donaldson, not a lot of guys, you know, not a big name. He's hitting 310, 9 homers, 42 RBI for this Oakland team. You know, you got Cespedes, who is, he's not even having a great year. He's only hitting 240. You know, he leads the team in home runs with 13. But other than that, I mean, yeah, this team is really getting the job done. And you look at the pitching staff as well.
I don't know how this pitching staff is actually winning games, Nick. I hate to say that because their best pitcher is Bartolo Colon. Guy's like 45 years old.
Still Bartolo Colon, yeah. 8-2 on the year with an ERA, 2.92, and then you have a guy Tommy Malone, who, AJ Griffin, Jared Parker. I mean, these guys are,
like I said, no namers.
No namers, just pure no namers. And but I think this team is, I think they're obviously the real deal. They're in first place in the American League West, where you know there was a time where Texas was by far the best team in baseball, and we all expected the Angels to do better than what they're producing on the field right now. The garbage that they're playing.
But you're being actually nice saying garbage.
I know. But then, so you had Oakland sweep the Yankees in that 18-inning thriller yesterday where the Yankees, I think they're in trouble. I think the Yankees are slowly but surely going in the wrong direction. They've lost three in a row now. Yesterday's game, Hafner, Youkilis, and Wells combined for an 0-for-23. These guys are not getting it done. I expect big things for the Yankees at the trade deadline. They're not going to, I mean, Youkilis hasn't panned out. Vernon Wells is hitting 100 in the month of June.
They just tried Youkilis, though.
But he's not doing anything. They signed him for a one-year contract. Yeah. They don't expect him to be there. And A-Rod's not coming back.
He might not play. I don't know when he's going to play A-Rod with that whole scandal.
He may never play again.
I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see what happens. I don't know. I mean, Brett Gardner's not playing bad.
Brett Gardner's on fire right now. But other than that, I mean, the Yankees got good news yesterday. Jeter has been cleared.
He's taking fielding activities, right?
Well, he got cleared for full baseball activities now. They expect him back right around the All-Star break. So that's good news, but I don't know. I expect the Yankees to make a splash around the trade deadline because, you know, these veterans in Hafner and Wells, and you know, they started out hot but struggling right now, and the Yankees have fallen into third place in the East.
Yeah, now let me ask you a question. How do we feel about Phil Hughes? Do you think he's gone?
I think he's a potential guy they could trade. I don't know. He's not pitching bad though.
He's not pitching bad, but he's 3-5 on the year. His ERA is almost 5 right now.
Yeah,
I think he's better than what he shows.
I think he could be better in the National League.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't bad last 16-13 last year, but. I like you said, he's probably better nationally. I think he's a lot more stuff. He's a lot more. He's better, like I said. He's better than what he shows when he's on the field. I think he's just in a bad predicament right now. I think his New York Yankees time has kind of come up, I think, and it's going to be interesting to see. Like you said, another guy could be traded.
That's for sure. So we'll see what happens. Trade deadline coming up in just over a month. So, I think that's pretty much. Gonna wrap it up for us here. We're running out of time. Game two, NHL coming up tomorrow night. And then also Game 5 of the NBA Finals coming up Sunday. For Mark Scarcell, I'm Nick Petrone. I want to thank everybody for tuning into this podcast. And we will be back on the air on 1490 WAZL on Monday night. So get at us then. Mark, you stay classy, sir.
Hey, I'll try to as best as I can. And for all our fans out there, the Memphis Grizzlies are now interested in George Karl.
Woo!
The Memphis Grizzlies are interested in George Karl. Some serious talks being talked about right now. Nothing final yet, but don't be surprised if you see George Karl get hired. He might be get hired by Memphis Grizzlies. Just want to let everybody know that.
Yeah, that would not be a bad fit, so we'll see what happens there. So have a great weekend, everybody. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook for the latest on the U.S. Open and much more around sports. Till then, take it easy.